Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Renee at Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me tonight. I of course have some terrible things to read to everybody tonight, because in my endeavor to keep enlightening myself about what needs to be done out there, I keep coming back to grown-ups, and my original thought has always been that we, as the adults, the kings in our own personal kingdom, the queens in our own personal kingdom, need to take more charge, need to be in a place where we take responsibility for the things that go on in our own homes and in our own lives. And the reason I say this is because when I look up certain things and I find out certain stories and I research a little bit deeper, I came to the realization that it's very rare that something happens, a bad something happens as a direct result from a kid. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying the statistics show me that almost always the driving force, the orchestrator, it usually is a snowball effect from an adult in somebody's life. Now, the truth of the matter is, every one of us that are born into this world at some point in time have a real mother and a real father. I realize that that doesn't mean that's who we grow up with. I realize that that doesn't mean that they're ever around again after the creation and the birth. So somebody else takes that responsibility. But the truth is of the matter is that for a good majority of our life, we want their acceptance, their love, their approval. Everything that we strive for is to get them to pay attention to us, to love us, to care about us. Now, I read a lot of stories about kids who have got problems, social problems, that stem from some kind of a mental defect of some kind. Bipolar seems to cover a very large territory out there. Seems to be a catch-all phrase. If you got a kid who's got mood swings, they're probably bipolar. Or if you've got a kid that is always frustrated and mean and angry, oh, he's probably got ADHD, FQPRS. So the point here, though, no matter how you want to slice this piece of pie, is the kids, especially the littler ones, are looking for the approval of the adults. And if the adults, and it doesn't have to be mom and dad, let me make that clear, all the adults in a child's life should be helping them, steering them in the right direction, keeping things copacetic for them so that the real world doesn't hit them square in the face at the age of 5. So when I'm researching and I'm looking at all these different things, I find some incredibly awful articles about adults, actually more often than I do about kids. And as you know, the past few times that I've read things about things that have happened to kids in school, there's been an adult involved, a teacher who's watched, a teacher who set it in motion, an adult that, or several adults who won't step up to the plate and be a cheering audience for a child who's trying to step up on a pedestal and change things in their life. We're seeing a lot of that. So I've got these three stories that I want to tell you about. I'm going to bring Shelly in so that so that she can hear the stories while I'm reading them, and we can open comments up, and she can talk about how she feels about them. Are you there, Sal? I think you're going to have to call in again. Okay, we had a bad connection with her. Let's give her a second to call back and let me see if I get a better connection. But the point I'm trying to make tonight, and when I read these three stories, you're going to be blown away. You're going to think to yourself, these people aren't really there. Rini's making this up. Well, you know, truth is always, always, always stranger than fiction. And if I could make up stories like this, believe me, I'd be a famous author someplace. I'd get out right now and start writing books about things like this. Are you there, Shell?
Yeah, can you hear me this time?
Yes, this time it's much better. There was a big, loud interference. It could be, again, with the radio station.
I was going through West Atlantic Avenue. Every time I go there, my phone either hangs up or it gets all squirrely.
Oh, okay. All right, so have you heard what I've been talking about?
Yes, and you haven't told the stories yet, though, right?
No. I wanted to bring you in before I told them.
Okay.
So we've laid the groundwork so you all understand what I'm talking about. So these three stories I found today, and I'm not kidding you, you're gonna think I'm looking in another world to find some of these things. Louisiana. A Louisiana woman has pleaded guilty to selling two children for a cockatoo and $175 in what her attorney called an attempt to do a good thing that went wrong. Donna Louise Greenwell is 53 years old. It was a really clumsy attempt at an adoption proceeding, said Steve Silich, attorney for Donna Louise Greenwell of Pitkin. She was trying to help the children and get them situated. Okay. Greenwell, 53, was sentenced Monday to 15 months of hard labor on each of two criminal counts. Sale of a minor is a criminal count. So she got 30 months, which is short of 3 years, to do hard labor for trying to sell two children. The sentences are to run concurrently. So she didn't get almost 3 years. She got 15 months. The case centered on a 5-year-old boy and a 4-year-old girl in Greenwell's custody. Investigators said she called Paul Romero and Brandy Lynn Romero of Evangeline Parish early last year after seeing a flyer that they posted offering a cockatoo for sale and offered to deliver the children for about $2,000. When the Romeros said they could not afford that, a deal was struck for the bird, valued at $1,500 plus some cash. Greenwell had custody of the children for more than a year before meeting the Romeros, her lawyer said. Her lawyers have maintained she was just trying to find a better home for them. They were undernourished and not well taken care of, the lawyer said. It's my understanding that the mother had requested that she take care of the kids. Another lawyer for Greenwell said previously that the children were abandoned to her care. Neither the children's mother or father could be located. The $175 was to cover the cost of an attorney to transfer custody of the children to the Romeros. The cockatoo was a gift to Greenwell's granddaughter, he said. Plea deal. Greenwell's sentences were a part of a plea deal worked out with the Evangeline Parish District Attorney's Office. Silkich, that's the attorney, said Greenwell could have faced up to 10 years on each count and another 20 years as a habitual offender. The district attorney agreed not to file charges against Greenwell as a habitual offender as part of the plea bargain. She did not have a good attorney for the two previous counts, oh God, which left her with a record she didn't really deserve, he said. He said the charges were for issuing worthless checks and second-degree battery. Now, battery usually means you've laid your hands on somebody.
Wow.
The Romeros of Eunice pleaded guilty to two felony counts of sale of a minor child, the district attorney said in an earlier statement. Their five-year prison sentences were suspended in exchange for their testimony against Greenwell. The district attorney's office did not return repeated calls Tuesday for comment. Greenwell will begin serving her sentence on March 25th. Now, I ask you, first of all, I don't know, maybe we're talking about an area of this world where nobody lives there that has a cerebellum in their head.
Oh, my God. That's just an absurd story.
I found it in like six different places, and this is from the Associated Press.
Let me ask you a question. You haven't read it yet, and I don't know if that's the end of it. Do they ever give you a status on where the children are now?
No. The assumption is that the children have been put into foster care, legitimate foster care. They don't say much about the children other than talking about this. This is the other thing that bothers me. The children got little or no attention on this whole story.
Oh my God.
I searched to find out if there was anything under her name that said anything about the children, I found nothing. So I guess the assumption would be that someplace in Louisiana, there's two little kids. I'm assuming they were brother and sister.
Oh boy!
Are just in a foster situation. Hopefully, a lot safer than Donna Louise Greenwell. And these are the adults, and we're bitching about the kids.
I mean, first of all, the parents. I don't know if the parents can be located. The mother apparently abandoned the kids to this woman. So I don't know who this woman was to the mother of the children to begin with, if they were friends or if they're relatives. You know, and then for the children to be suffering from malnutrition is pretty serious. I mean, that of all the statistics that you read and all the comments you read from that article, that's the one thing that got my attention, that these kids were suffering from malnutrition.
Right.
You know,
well, and this woman, there's a picture of her, and she's a very plump, gray-haired woman. 53 is not all that old, but she's pretty much got white hair. And even in my own head, because I'm who I am, I'm thinking to myself, well, she probably has had a crappy life too. But that's no excuse. She's 53 years old. How could she not take care of kids? And if it was really striking a bargain to find these kids a better place to live, why was there any money involved at all?
Right. Or in exchange for a cockatoo that probably is going to get neglected prior also.
Personally, I wouldn't trust her with a pet rat. So
exactly.
I don't.
Exactly.
These,
that's kind of where I was going.
Yeah. These other people who are running a church, what did I say the name of it was? I have to go to the print on these things that I print out is so tiny. I have to get on top of this piece of paper here. the Evangeline Parish is what it's called. So that usually means some kind of an organization, a religious organization. But And they were going to get 5 years. Explain that one, Shell. If they had turned on her, the Romeros were going to get 5 years for trying to buy the kids.
Well,
at least they cared enough to take the kids. But they were going to get five, and she was going to get 15 months.
You don't know what their intentions towards the kids were. You don't know why they were buying them. You don't know if they loved these kids and wanted to add them to their family, or if they were one of these kids that one of these people, these families that collect kids so they can get social service money for them. You don't really know why they were adopting them. Like you said, there's a lot of details missing, you know. I can't see them being prosecuted if they really cared about these children. The whole thing seems, you know, just awfully tawdry to me, you know, like on both sides. It seems like these kids were just being used as pawns, like an ends to a mean type of thing. I mean, means
yeah.
to an end. It's, I don't know, that's a very disturbing story, I got to tell you.
Yeah, yeah. And that's my least one I need you to know.
Really?
So we're gonna number two is much shorter and is, but is nonetheless unbelievably atrocious. Misty Van Horn, Oklahoma mother, attempted to sell her kids on Facebook for $4,000. An Oklahoma mother was arrested last week after she allegedly tried to sell her children online. Police say Misty Van Horn attempted to sell her kids on Facebook, possibly to cover the bond money she needed to get her boyfriend out of jail. Van Horn evidently contacted a female acquaintance through the social networking site, offering to trade her 2-year-old and 10-month-old for $4,000. Van Horn also agreed to accept $1,000 for the 2-year-old alone, the Oklahoman notes. According to the police report, Van Horn's Facebook message read, "Just come to Salisaw. It's only 30 minutes away, and I'll give you all of her stuff and let y'all have her forever for $1,000. One of Van Horn's neighbors, Tony Mosby, said the 22-year-old also sought out money from area residents to pay her boyfriend's bail. She was going door to door, here to all the way across town, asking everybody for money to get him out," Mosby told the local television station. Van Horn was taken into custody Wednesday after the Arkansas woman to whom Van Horn made the offer contacted the Oklahoma Department of Human Services. Van Horn is being held at a Sequoia County jail at $40,000 bond. Since her booking on the charge of trafficking minors, both of Van Horn's kids have been taken into custody.
Yeah, I think so. And that's
so,
the end of that story?
That's the end of that story.
And how old were these children? 2 years old and 10 months?
2 year old and a 10 month old, yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow. Yeah, you're right. that's just as despicable, and it's a little bit more shocking to me. You know.
Well,
wow.
and you know, these were her children.
Her
these
own
were not children.
Children.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
her very own children.
Her own children, mm-hmm. And she's got a guy sitting in prison, and she's going to use. And plus the fact that, you know, I mean, I'm mumbling here because there's like 20 different thoughts in my head, and I can't get them out of my mouth fast enough. I mean, my reaction to that story is like over the top. I'm shocked. I mean, I've heard stories like that, but.
And you see, the whole point is, the whole reason I decided to read these tonight is because somehow, somewhere, some way, everybody has to start taking responsibility for their own behavior. Instead of constantly and continuously laying the blame on somebody else, pointing their finger at 10 other people, you have to accept responsibilities for yourself. And, like I said when I first started talking tonight, the parents of children, whether you're the natural parents or you were blessed enough to find a child you could adopt and now they're yours, and it's a lifetime of love when you have a child,
mm-hmm.
a lifetime of love. And most of the time, it's the kind of love that you will only experience with a child of yours. And again, I don't believe that adopted parents and adopted children don't love each other just as much as natural parents do, because it's about the trust and the feelings that they get for each other.
Right.
But the point is that there's so many of us that are out there that don't, first of all, take the job seriously, don't, second of all, understand the responsibility. And, I mean, for years I've heard, oh, you have kids too soon and you don't know how to be a mother. Believe me, I was a mother when I was 8. I didn't have any kids, but I was already a mother when I was 8. And I know a lot of women like that, a lot of women like that. I know a lot of men like that. It's about responsibility. You either are or you are not. But
right.
Having children is the biggest responsibility you'll ever take on. And now, at a time when we're looking around and we're seeing kids shooting other kids and we're seeing kids stabbing each other in schools and bringing in guns and being mad because somebody made fun of their red hair or whatever the story is, all the stories we've talked about over the last 2.5 months, all could have been different if everybody just started out accepting responsibilities. And with that comes the responsibility of knowing your child needs help.
That's right. That's right. Being observant enough and sensitive enough to be aware when they're having issues, when they're sad or unhappy or stressed, or that there's something not quite right, whether they're vocalizing it or not. If they're your kid, and again, whether biological or adopted, but if they're your kid, there has to be some kind of a bond. I mean, I have friends of mine. I mean, look at you and I. You and I know when each other is upset about it. We don't have to say anything. We can tell
That's
by mannerisms.
Right.
How many times somebody calls you and something was going on, and all you said was hello, and the first words out of our mouth is, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we know
absolutely.
Each other. I know the tone of your voice. You know the tone of my voice, and that's all there is. You mean to tell me a child of yours comes in and there's something wrong and you don't pick up on it? You know? It's exactly what you're talking about. There has to be some level of what's going on. Talk to me, you know. But
that's right.
Too many kids today are angry, or sad, or feeling hopeless, or feeling fearful, and none of the responsible people in their lives, none of the responsible authority figures, or parental figures, or teachers, are doing anything to change that for the kids. And it's just going from bad to worse for them. We have a generation going up that's going to be completely dysfunctional, and it's the generation that's eventually going to be running things. Let's think about that.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. And in the meantime, they're also taking the brunt of the blame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, there are too many choices for kids today. I'm the first one to say that. There's too many drugs out there. There's too many opportunities to do foolishness. But that's the whole reason that they have parents.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can be there. And I'm not saying you can stop all those things. God, how I wish that was true, because I would have stopped many things. And many things were my own fault. So, but eventually you have to, again, accept the responsibility and do what you can to make things better. And now, of course, when I read stories like this, I feel more adamant about the fact that this, you know, this begins at a very early age, who you are going to be when you're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And responsibilities are what we have to teach the little people, because obviously we stopped teaching some of the grown-ups today, and maybe even before today. I've known grown-ups in my lifetime that were old enough to be my parents that I would look at them and think to myself, oh, my God, how did they get along all these years without anybody to keep an eye on them? So, you
know,
we've both met people like that, right? So, yeah. But now everything seems to be facing all, even the deal with these two boys from Boston. Here the mother gets on the air and rants and raves and shakes her hands up in the air, oh, my poor sons. my poor sons, you know, we came to America. My God, why did we ever come to America? It was supposed to be a wonderful place. And she is a part of it.
Wow.
She's a part of leading her sons astray and
yep.
and going down on the United States of America, where she, in the very beginning, claimed she brought them for a better life, but that's not why she brought them here. So again, the leadership for these two young boys, now one is dead, and the other one will spend the rest of his life in a prison. If he ends up being okay, he got shot in the face and shot someplace else, so I don't even know what his medical situation is, but he was only 19 years old.
And he's got to live with the fact that he ran over his own brother if he does have any of his brain matter still working.
Well, apparently he's given reports on everything that they did and said that they planned on going to Times Square and they planned on going someplace else.
Wow.
But the point is that this mother, you know, moms are capable of just about anything. I know that because I am one. And if you think, if you're the kind of mother who sticks up for your child, you know, to that degree, you could lie to anybody about anything. But
wow.
As well as that, you know, that's how you are with other things. And she obviously believed that we are the enemy, that the United States is the enemy. And she led her children down that path. So
yep.
Now you have to hear this third one because this is going to give us lots of fodder.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Wow.
Ready? Accused of perpetrating a profound evil, former Pennsylvania judge Mark, I want to make sure I say his name right, Ciavarella Jr. Has been sentenced to 28 years in prison for illegally accepting money from a juvenile prison developer while he spent years incarcerating thousands of young people. Prosecutors says the judge sent juveniles to jail as a part of a Kids for Cash scheme involving Robert Miracle, builder of the Pennsylvania and Western Pennsylvania Child Care Juvenile Detention Centers. The ex-judge was convicted in February of 12 counts that included racketeering, money laundering, mail fraud, and tax evasion. In addition to his prison sentence, Ciavarella was ordered to pay nearly $1.2 million in restitution. At his sentencing, Ciavarella acknowledged his illegal acceptance of money from Miracle, but he denied ever jailing a juvenile in exchange for money. Once the case against Ciavarella surfaced, special investigative panels began reviewing cases he handled from 2003 to 2008. So we're talking about 5 years. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court concluded that he denied about 5,000 juveniles, some as young as 10 years old, their constitutional rights, leading to the vacating of their convictions.
Oh, my.
Among the young people exploited by Ciavarella were 15-year-old Hillary Trenciu, who was sentenced to 3 months at a juvenile detention center for mocking an assistant principal on a MySpace page. And 13-year-old Shane Bly, who was sent to boot camp for 2 weekends after being accused of trespassing in a vacant building. Another judge, Michael T. Conahan, used his position to shut down the county-run juvenile detention center and redirect juvenile detainees to the private prisons. He pleaded guilty to racketeering conspiracy. So here you have two judges, both of them on the bench for, you know, the picture of Mark Ciavarella looks to be 65, 66, So you get to be a judge after you're a lawyer for a while. So say you got to sit on the bench at 40.
Oh, my God.
So for at least 25 years, this man has been judging things in this way. Now, you can't tell me that 2003 is when he started being a jerk. You know, when he started making money that way. You know that if somebody could talk him into doing that for the money, granted the money was the incentive this time, but what does that say about all the other decisions he made sitting on the bench?
Oh, sure. Oh, wow. And, you know, it's so funny because as you were reading that story, and, you know, I've discussed this before, you know, the Law and Order series is, although it's fictional, it's based on things that have actually happened. And one of the episodes was about what you did. And, I mean, I'm watching the episode, and I was stunned by it, and I was like, oh, my God, that means that had to have happened somewhere, and now you just read the story. But one of the Law and Order episodes was about
Yeah. But it was a woman judge. It was a woman judge.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
And they were.
I know.
And they were railroading. they were railroading defendants into prison and convicting them on bogus charges. You know, and
yeah.
Because they were getting kickbacks. And mm-hmm. you're reading the story, and it's like, oh my God, it really is a true story. You know.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I know it's like. And again, it comes down to greed and power. Anytime
yep.
greed and power are there, there's zero respect for life. How they can line their pockets with money and try to have that type of a lifestyle at the expense of other human beings, whether it's a child or not, I can't even think of the word for it. It's incomprehensible. And then when
mm-hmm.
you add to that it's a child. It's somebody that can't even really fight for themselves, then it's even more incomprehensible completely indefensible, because the only motive behind that is greed and power.
There's nothing redeemable about any of the story.
Right,
nothing.
That's the word I was using for. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing redeeming
yep.
in that whatsoever. That's just a completely, completely evil act.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. Yes.
You know.
So now, the other thing that we know about being in a court of law, and I've talked about this a lot, the manipulation of the system and all the other things that can take place because of old laws and old regulations and old cases that can be quoted and brought up and once precedence has set or been set because of a decision made by a judge once upon a time back in, 1492 or something, then they can actually claim a case on that. So while I was reading this today, I thought to myself, so where's the representative for the child? Now, I have always been told that if a child goes into a courtroom without an adult, they get an ad litem.
Right.
Somebody that's supposed to look out for them. And in my history here in Florida, I have had in my home and kind of watched out for, and this is an interesting story too that I've never told on the air, a young girl who was abducted by a cyber molester and met her after meeting her online and took her away. And she was gone for quite a long time, and then she finally found her way back home again. And when she got home, mom has more children, and she was expected to just fall into the mode of big sister babysitter kind of a deal like that. And she tried to become emancipated because she couldn't deal with that. And I remember, I can't remember how long it was, but for 2 or 3 years, she was being treated like somebody's significant other in another part of the world. So So now all of a sudden she's got to go back into this mode. She went back to school. She was appointed an ad litem and was emancipated from her her parent.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, this ad litem kept tabs on her. She even stayed with her a couple different times. So I have to wonder, in some of these cases when I read about something like a judge being able to get away with that, where's the ad litem for that 10-year-old?
Well, sometimes these judges are so powerful that unless you are an attorney that has equal standing in the court, very well respected, and that you have your own tenure, younger attorneys or attorneys without a lot of power, especially ones that might be doing something on a pro bono level or whatever, they just don't have the clout to combat the. I mean, you make any accusations against a judge unless you have ironclad facts. You have not just sealed your fate. You have no career now. You will be blackballed. You will not be able to go into any courtroom. And unfortunately, these judges carry unwarranted power, and it shouldn't be permitted. And I know, and I want to make this very clear, I know that there are a lot of judges that are fair and that are in the legal system because they want to make a difference. Unfortunately, it opens the door, when you have that kind of power, it also opens the door for corruption and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there is also a fair amount of judges who go there. Unfortunately for me, I have been personally involved. I'm not going to go into the details, but I've been personally involved as an assistant. I wasn't a litigant, but I've been personally involved in trying to assist in two cases recently, two different cases in two different courts, one in Broward County and one in Palm Beach County. And ironically, in both cases, the judges should have been retired. They were both incompetent. I sat through a couple of the hearings, and I'm listening to these judges. The one judge kept forgetting what he was talking about. He'd be in the middle of something. He would start out saying something in the middle of the court case and then contradict himself. And if the attorney tried to say, well, that's not what you said, he would go off on him. Don't correct me. I know what I just said. And he wouldn't let anybody speak. It was the most amazing thing. This guy must have been senile, and he's allowed up there making judgments that are going to affect people's lives. And then the second one, the judge actually threw up the petition of the defendant to have an emergency hearing to reexamine evidence because it wasn't the judge didn't cover anything of the defendant's position on a particular case, and the judge refused to look at the petition. You can't do that. So he made a decision for one side without considering the evidence from the other side. And every attorney involved, we spoke to four different attorneys, and they said, first of all, that's not even legal, but nobody can go after this judge. He's been doing this for about, he's very well known in the circuit. Everybody knows he's corrupt, and nobody can do anything about it. That's what we were told. And there's nothing that can be done about it.
Wow.
And I find that astonishing.
I do too.
People know these judges are out there, and they cannot be touched.
Well, and see, my experience is kind of the opposite. My experience was meeting some really who I considered fair and appropriate, responsible men. And I also met a woman that I thought was doing a job that she was proud of, and the men were doing jobs that they were proud of and took very seriously.
Well, that's why I started with my disclaimer, because I know it's not all of them. I'm sure it's not even most of them, but unfortunately, mm-hmm. there are some that have been there for a long time, that have a lot of power, and should not be in the position. And there are people in the judicial system, their assistants, other attorneys, other judges that see it, and nobody touches them. Nobody does anything to stop them.
Yeah, that's too bad, because then that hurts everybody, just like anything like that. You know, my grandmother's favorite saying was one bad apple, you know. But on the same token, the point I'm trying to make is when I met some of these really good people who took things very seriously, and I would listen, and I'm a very good listener. And I would, you know, and then all of a sudden, next thing I knew, they would have to recuse themselves. That's how, you know, that's how ridiculous things could get to be. And I thought to myself, in a story like this, or even the one that you just said, you know, is it because there's lack of competency in the other prosecutors? Is it because of their power that people are afraid? I don't know. There could be many reasons. It scares me to think that anybody is so powerful that other people who are knowledgeable and know what they're doing are afraid to do anything with them. That scares me a lot. And I really hope that that's not true. But, it can be true. I'm not saying that it isn't true. I'm just saying that that really bothers me if that's the reason why nothing happens. Because I did see lots of people rock boats, people that I didn't think could rock boats were rocking boats. Mm-hmm. And it made me feel like, you know, well, geez, you know, this is, we're talking about somebody who's been doing this for this many years and his reputation is awesome and this and everything. And then all of a sudden, you know, what he said didn't make any difference. That upset me because I thought that they were right on mark. So I guess there's both things going on, and it probably depends on our favorite terminology, the rest of the story. And the fact of the matter is, people like us may never know the rest of the story. But I would certainly hope that somewhere out there, there's people that are in positions that can make a difference, and I hope to God that they are watching and paying attention. Because if things like that are still going on and people are being hurt and kids are being hurt for the almighty dollar, somebody's got to do something. And of course, I'm not smart enough to take on the legal system, so I'm not even going to go there. But it does upset me and does make me feel insecure.
Well, the whole thing is this: you could talk about dozens and dozens of different professions, whether it's medical, legal, police officers, judges, attorneys, doctors, nurses, school teachers, principals, I mean, on and on and on. They have to just go through dozens of different professions. And in all of them, you have people that are just mediocre. They're not bad, they're not good. They're just showing up to get their paycheck at the end of the week. You have people that are disgruntled because they got into a profession that they're not passionate about, and they almost feel disgruntled on a daily basis, and they take it out on whoever they're dealing with on that day. And then you have other people that are completely passionate and wonderful and creative, and they bring a breath of fresh air into it. I mean, I've met police officers. I also did have a very good dealing with a judge a few years ago on a case that did have to do with me, and the judge was completely fair. He actually gave me some pretty good advice. And actually helped me resolve things with the other party just by giving the two of us a little piece of friendly advice. He was a very sweet man, very ethical, very knowledgeable, on his game, you know. So I've met people across the board. I've met some school teachers that were so, like when you were talking about the other day, the school teacher that had the teddy bears and then messed the room up the night after they all left it, so that when the kids came in the next day, it was like the teddy bears had a party. Impressed me. That story impressed me because that's a teacher who cares, who actually is being creative to think about things to help these kids grow an imagination and have wonder about life. I mean, I was so happy when you told that story because it shows me that there is still a passion with some teachers. But you also have met teachers that could care less about the job and that go to school and see the kids as an imposition and don't want to be doing what they're doing. So what it is that the people that are passionate about what they're doing need to stay that way and need to be a role model for other people in their profession. These teachers, these police officers, judges, doctors, nurses, whatever, if you're passionate about what you're doing, keep it up. I applaud you. It's what we need to do. You're being, not only are you being a role model for your, for other people in your profession, but you're being a role model for the young people that are looking up to you. And if a young person sees you and sees you being ethical and professional and kind-hearted and on your game, they might just want to emulate you. They might want to grow up to be a police officer or a teacher or a judge or a doctor or a nurse because of how they interacted with you, you know? And it's how rewarding would that be to know that you either inspired a coworker to step their game up or to inspire a young person to take on something that you've chosen as your life's work?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something that I think is, you know, that's one of the things that are being dropped by the wayside. Remember the night that we talked about it's very hard today to, you know, talk about heroes and the fact that our heroes, the people that we admire and look up to, are, you know, they're out there to be picked on, ridiculed, made fun of on an everyday basis. Obviously, when I was a little girl, which was a very, very long time ago, it was about, you know, the President of the United States. I mean, I remember my great-grandmother telling me that she saw President Lincoln. And she was a little girl, a little tiny girl, and she said she saw him. And telling me the story when she was in her 80s and I was just, a little girl, she had tears in her eyes. And so for me, that's what it seems like to me, too. You get to stand next to the President of the United States. Maybe he isn't the person that you voted for. Maybe you would have just as soon that the man that ran against him. But they're equals. And because we're a democracy and everybody is supposed to vote and everybody is supposed to have their say, and I hear all these arguments about the electoral vote and how they do this and how they do this. So nobody trusts it anymore. But nobody's doing anything about that. You know, they just want to pass judgment on it and say, well, you know, God knows what they're doing because, you know, you can't believe that. And then they ridicule the man that got that seat. And let's face it, most of us will never have the opportunity to sit in that seat. It's just, and the Pope. Here's the poor Pope. He's got a whole bunch of men that believe in God and that wanted to make a difference and chose that lifestyle, and then they succumbed to temptation. So what do you want the Pope to do? Line him up against the wall and shoot him?
Right.
The Pope still believes in God and forgiveness, and that's what he teaches. And if you can't forgive the people that are spreading the word with you, then how are you supposed to forgive anybody else?
Right.
And yet,
right,
everybody wants to, you know, again, find fault in him. Well,
right.
I'm sorry.
And again, it's like stereotyping any other. You know, yes, there are some priests that have severe problems, moral and so, you know, social problems. But the bottom line is, it's not the majority. Most priests are took that on because it was a calling, and they're very spiritual, and they're very appropriate, and it's like because a percentage of them go the other way and do something that's perverse and immoral, and even in the eyes of the church, and then you're going to judge the entire church based on that, that's bigotry just like any other bigotry, because you're taking a small percentage that are not acting appropriately or immorally or illegally, and then you're saying that the entire population of that, whether it be an ethnicity or a religion or whatever, is the same because a small percentage of them do this awful thing. And it's ridiculous.
Well, and the whole point is believing in God. And, of course, I don't want to get into religious conversations because they can be very intricate, and I don't want to say the wrong thing and get anybody excited about anything. But the truth of the matter is, it's about forgiveness and love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, finding fault in everybody and persecuting everybody for not believing what you believe. Yes, it's wrong to do some of the things that many of us have done, whether we're priests or parents or big sisters or big brothers or whoever we are. We've made mistakes and we've done things, but it's my hope, and I'm going to put this out there for all of you to remember. If you don't forgive the people that do foolishness or hurt other people with their foolishness just because they can't find their way clear to do things the right way, you're still supposed to forgive them. If you're really who you say you are, if you are really a person who believes in Christianity and love and forgiveness, you are supposed to forgive those sinners. That's the whole idea of religion, is to forgive.
All religions teach that. All religions.
Exactly. No, but when I say Christianity, I mean everybody. It's about the belief that you have in something that's bigger than all the rest of us. And if you do believe that, then you're supposed to be forgiving and loving. You're not supposed to be condescending and judgmental. And it doesn't. And I'm not asking you to condone. There's a big difference between condoning and forgiving.
That's right. That's right. And a lot of people think when you say forgive, that means look the other way and nothing has to happen to that person. No, that's not what we're saying. I mean, if somebody does something, especially that's immoral, that hurts another human being, obviously there has to be a consequence of that. You can't have people just running amok and just forgiving them and then letting them go on about their way. But the
bottom line
is, by harboring hatred towards them or by you're diminishing yourself by entertaining those types of emotions, you can forgive someone, feel compassion for them, and yet still bring them to justice. You know, the two aren't exclusively, separated from each other.
Well, and it's just like tonight, the story that I read about these people. About these people that did the things, selling children and trading children for a cockatoo and all this kind of stuff. In my mind, these people not only need forgiveness, they need help. Now, do I want to run out and do something for either one of them tonight after reading those stories? No, I'd be lying if I said I did. But in the long run, at the end of the day, am I gonna now that they've been caught and now that they've been stopped and everything, the kids are in a safe place and everything, am I going to think about every day how, I'd like to grab a hold of them and choke them and everything? No, I'm not. And some people do that. But I don't believe in doing that, and I don't believe that's what we're supposed to be doing. And again,
well, it's not going to fix the world.
It doesn't change anything. All it does is make you angry.
Right, right. By pouring hatred out into the world, I mean, I heard those stories and it made my stomach flip. I was just focused on the children. When I think about those people, though, I don't think of hatred towards them. I feel complete. I'm trying to think of what the word is. I guess it's compassion, because I think of somebody that has a child in their care and that can't see the gift that child is to them.
Yeah.
Like the one woman who was going to sell her kids to get her boyfriend out of jail. Well, first of all, that's not, her brain is not working functionally. You know, if you have a boyfriend that's sitting in jail, first of all, that says something right there, all right, that she would be so attached to him that she would want to sell. And that story, it was her own kids. Wasn't that the one that was her own kids?
The one that was trying to get her boyfriend out. Yes, that was her own kids.
The own kids. All right, so these children grew in your body. These are part of you, all right? And here you have a boyfriend that's, you know, obviously not wrapped too tight if he got himself in that kind of trouble, and you're going to sell your kids to them. I mean, I can't even begin to think of the emptiness that woman must have. All right,
she needs help.
Right.
Yeah,
to feel she needs to be completed by a man, first of all, and then the emptiness to not even realize that here she has unconditional love from these children and she doesn't even recognize it. How sad is that?
Very. Well, both stories. And the judge, I mean, you know, if I was going to be, I guess I have the most anger for the judge because the judge sits in a place of power. And the other two ladies were totally powerless. And that does make a difference in the way you think. So really, in my eyes, even though the other two things are horrendous, the biggest sinner there, if you want to talk about sins, is the judge, because he knew what he was doing and didn't care at all.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't feel any compassion for the two judges.
No.
I don't, not at all. Yeah, I'm just seeing greed and power, and so
yeah.
I have no compassion for them.
And well, out of sight, out of mind. The kids meant absolutely nothing. And the other two ladies, you know, they should probably be, you know, for a short time, fitted in a jacket that ties in the back to find out what's going on in their heads. So,
exactly.
You know, and that's in most cases. I remember going way back to some of the horrendous stories that I've listened to in my lifetime, the woman who drowned her two beautiful children in that car.
Oh,
woman,
my God.
Even Casey Anthony, all that stuff that happened. And, you know, but something's wrong. You know, there's a disconnect there someplace. And at least you can say that to yourself and think to yourself, you know, that's what happened there. But a judge who just does things for money. That's like when I look at all the kids that are doing a lot more time, by the way, than either of these people are doing for selling drugs or being involved with drugs or being a repeat offender because you're a working girl or any of those things. These people need help. And,
exactly.
And
I agree.
You know, it's not a... There's no way I can believe, except for maybe one or two that I've seen in my lifetime, where that's the actual choice. And, you know, not to be a working girl that's living out on the street, maybe to be another Heidi Fleiss or something like that, that's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, the oldest business in the world. So that's a little bit mm-hmm. different. But I mean, when your choice never gets you any place and never gets you any better, there's something else going on.
Well, there are some choices that are self-destructive, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are other choices, like what these judges did, that are exploitive of other people. So
exactly.
When your choices,
that's the right word, exploitive, yeah.
Because you're lost, because you, whatever reason, okay, those type of people I can feel compassion for. Because
mm-hmm.
maybe, you know, what is that saying? You know, there but for God, there go I, or something like that. I mean, I'm
yeah.
screwing the whole thing up, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There but for
yeah.
God, why? You know,
yeah.
And it's, you know, who knows where people would be. But these, like what those judges did, that was premeditated. That was well thought out. This was a plan. They had to coordinate it with other people to basically just exploit the most innocent among us, children. For money.
Yeah. Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, they're no better than child pornographers.
Exactly. And that's where they should be, in with all those kind of men and women. That's where they should be. And of course, you know, you get into that realm, and that's of course a form of mental illness as well. We're almost
mm-hmm.
out of time though, and tomorrow night we have Izzy. and I look forward to hearing what he has to say. I'm going to email him tonight, and I'm also going to see if I can get a hold of Bailey, the little girl up in northern Florida, and see if she'd like to talk on the show.
Oh, well, that would be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. But in the meantime, we're out of time, so thank you, Miss Shelley. I think you're home because I heard all the dogs welcoming you home. So I'm glad you're done driving. So thank you very much. I love you. And from my heart to yours, everybody, good night.
Good night, everyone. Good night, Reen.
Good night, baby.